Do you want your middle school girl to grow into a strong, confident, and resilient young adult? So do I. The only thing is, middle school's hard for both kids and parents. Welcome to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. I'm Janice Scholl, and I'm just a regular parent on a mission to uncover the best tips and advice for raising middle school girls. Hey there, parents. Today, I'm speaking with Jessica Speer. Jessica is the highly acclaimed author of books for kids and teens, including The Phone Book, Stay Safe, Be Smart, and Make the World Better with the Powerful Device in Your Hand. If you're parenting a middle schooler, you need to know Jessica. I love her books for preteens and teens so much, in fact, that she's a return guest here on the podcast, and we have copies of all of her books in our house. By middle school, most kids have a cell phone. That's why Jessica's new book is so powerful. It helps kids understand their phone and the risks that go along with it. Thank you so much for being here today, Jessica.
Thanks for having me, Janice. I'm excited to talk to you about. We have a lot to talk about today.
We do, because you're doing something a little differently with your newest book, The Phone Book, than what I see is out there available to parents. And the second you told me you were writing this book, I was like, this is what I need. We, as parents, we've got information and books and websites that we can go to talk about smartphones in our kids, but I feel like it's really from the don't do it perspective. So yours is a little different. Could you tell us about who this book is for and what led you to write this book in this format?
Yeah. So the book is called The Phone Book, Stay Safe, Be Smart, and Make the World Better with the Powerful Device in Your Hand. And I really wrote this for preteens. And the reason why is the latest statistic I could find is 50% of 11-year-olds have a smartphone. You know, once they hit 12, that's over 75%. That means that a lot of 10-year-olds have them too. So, and we see this, you know, we see this out in the world. So, you know, kids are getting smartphones younger and younger, you know, at this stage. So I wanted to write something to help those kids and those families just have a deeper understanding of technology. So they're more informed consumers of tech, and also all those really important conversations about safety and privacy and disinformation. So there's a lot packed in there, and I wrote it, you know, also selfishly, because these are all the conversations I wanted to have with my kids. So I was writing this as my kids were preteens and early teens. So it was super helpful for me to really research this and, you know, have the chance to have conversations with my kids as I was writing this book too.
And I love that you're an outside party who's writing it for the kids. I think it's important for us to recognize that that's a huge statistic, you know, having 50% at 11 with phones, and once you hit 12, that being in the 70s, that's most of our kids. That's the majority. I think this is a normal time frame for kids to get phones. And while I totally support all families who choose not to give phones to their kids, I do think it's the norm. And so we have to not just say, don't do it, but we have to say, okay, well, if you're going to do it, let's do it safely. And let's talk to the kids directly. Because my kids, I don't know about yours, but they hear it much better coming from a book, coming from a different source, than only hearing it as a nag from parents.
Definitely. Yeah, I 100% agree that, you know, sometimes what we say just doesn't resonate as if they're hearing it from somebody else in a fun way. So like my other books, I just tried to make it fun. There's activities and there's quizzes and there's illustrations and secret codes, because, you know, who wants to read a serious book about cell phones? So I tried my best to try to keep it engaging, because, you know, let's face it, I'm competing with cell phones too.
That's such a great point. And, you know, full plug for Jessica Speer here, because we own a number of Jessica Speer books for our middle schooler. And I do really think they're exceptional. I think the way that you write in bite-sized chunks that are designed for the way our kids take in information, and you make it interesting and you make it relevant. You know, there are few books that are nonfiction that our kids will read cover to cover. They'll maybe pick up a couple of pages because mom and dad want them to, but your books are actually books that kids get engaged in because it's written with their perspective at heart.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
So I want to talk about when kids in middle school are given their first phone. And I know for us, you know, with both of our kids, the decision is once you're in the summer before middle school, you will get your first phone. And that's to kind of learn the ropes and figure it out before you hit the school year. But once our kids hit middle school, I feel like it's really on our, it's our responsibility to coordinate pickups after school. It's our responsibility to be able to communicate with them directly, not always the other parents, when we're coordinating what is not a play date, which is a hangout. I have been told don't use play date by my children. But what happens when we give this powerful tool over to our kids without giving them any direction?
You know, I when we just hand it over to them, you know, we've missed the opportunity, one, to have a lot of important conversations with them. So I do encourage parents to really, you know, prior to handing it over, just really think about all the things you want to talk about and to put some good ground rules in place. Like there's never a time that we're actually going to have more power and influence than the moment we're actually thinking about getting them a phone, you know, because they want that phone so bad. So that's our opportunity as parents to think about, all right, you know, this is coming down the pipe. So, you know, here are some things I want to make sure we talk about and I want to make sure you know. And also, you know, let's talk about a family tech agreement. So we know that, you know, we as a household have some ways that we are operating in our tech world in safe and healthy ways, you know, and there's so many examples of tech agreements online. And so we can find one that seems like a good fit for our family, but then, you know, the important step is to talk about it with your family. So to talk about, you know, what do we want? You know, do we actually want phones at the table? You know, do we act? Yeah. So let's bring the kids in this process to help create these rules for our household. And, you know, so now that my kids are teens, you know, that our family tech agreement has had to evolve with, you know, as my kids are growing and changing, you know, but it was a great place to start. And so back to your question, I would say we are handing them a lot of power. But by having a lot of important conversations with them, and even things like, you know, reading my book and things like that, you are giving some of the power to them. So there's not so much power in the phone. They realize they have power to use their phone in certain ways. So I'd like to talk about in the book too, you know, you have power, you know, and that power is how you choose to use your phone. Sometimes we let the phone just take control of us, you know, and they're designed that way. They're designed to be addictive. So encouraging kids to understand that they need to keep checking in and making sure they're the one who is in charge and making choices, you know, on their phone rather than the phone kind of, you know, taking over them.
Yeah. And I love that the first chapter of the book is teaching our kids that, you know, smartphones are powerful tools and they're designed to capture the attention of users, even when they're kids. I've got to ask you, can a book, when we have this gravitational pull to our phones that affects not just the kids, it affects us adults as well, can a book like this really help?
It's a good starting point. And I'll tell you what actually inspired this book is I watched this movie or documentary called The Social Dilemma, and it blew my mind. So that documentary really goes into how technology works. And I didn't know a lot of these things. And that actually was inspired me to write about this because I'm like, I want kids to know this, because if kids know how some of these persuasive design techniques work, how, you know, companies using advertising and our data, you know, how they're, you know, how they are trying to keep us staring at a screen for profit. You know, it makes sense. They're for-profit companies. You know, the more time we spend on screens, the more money they make. But the more kids know about that, the more informed consumers they are. So this is a conversation I think that's really ongoing with families. We can have it all the time just by noticing things and talking about it out loud. Like, hey, wow, that's so funny. I just searched on that. And now all of a sudden I'm seeing ads for that same product. You know, so just helping them make the connections that, you know, what we are all consumers of technology, you know, and so if we understand how this works and some of the design tricks companies use to keep us on phones, such as, you know, snap streaks and Snapchat, you know, that's brilliant. You know, so snap streaks keep kids tied to their phones, you know, tagging and notifications keep us tied to our phones. So if they understand these tricks, you know, it's a starting point. You know, we're still kind of fighting a little bit of a losing battle because we have the best designers in the world designing phones. But it's a starting point for kids and families to really understand, you know, what's kind of going on behind the curtain again, so they're just more informed consumers.
There's two things that I want to just touch on that you just said. And that's, first of all, teaching our kids that we're viewed as consumers, not individuals, not kids, when we're looked at by the companies who are creating these technologies. And preteens and teens are definitely not too young to understand that. I think we underestimate the power of our children to really reflect on what's going on around them in the world. And the earlier we teach them what the purpose of advertisements are, what the purpose of different types of activities on their phones are, it may not be easy for them to pull away, but it is planted in the back of their mind. And at some point when you have the dialogue again, because let's be honest, we're all going to be having some conversations with our kids about their phones in the future. The seed has already been planted. Now it's not just mom and dad are nagging me because for whatever reason, they don't want me to touch my phone that much. It's, hey, I know the purpose of the phone. Maybe mom and dad see something that I need to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I do feel like this generation of kids, we're kind of in the wild, wild west still when it comes to guardrails in place. But what I did find in my research is there's a lot of things going on to change that. I almost reference it like, you know, so when we invented cars, it took 100 years to really put seatbelts in. So, you know, these phones came out and then they were really adopted by younger kids and social media and apps. And we're just now starting to figure out, oh, actually, how can we do this better to protect kids online? And you know, part of my research, I listened in on several Senate hearings for online, you know, privacy and safety for kids. And just now, like 5 years later, just now, a couple of bills made it out of the Senate that are starting to do a better job of protecting, you know, the privacy and safety of kids. But it just takes a long time. You know, in our country, other countries are doing different things, but in our country, it just takes a long time to put these things in place. So I like to talk to kids about that too. Like, you know, you're the first generation and there actually aren't a lot of safety protocols in place yet. So it is up to us and you to make sure that we are protecting ourselves and being safe online because a lot of those guardrails aren't there yet.
Yeah. And when you put it in perspective like that, I think it makes so much more sense. You know, we didn't grow up with the safety features in cars that we have today. Mm-hmm. We didn't even have seatbelts. I mean, we were holding babies in the back seat in a bundle. And I think it helps people realize that just because something is created and out there and available for sale, it doesn't mean all of those considerations are in place. We're more of a get it out there, try it on the consumer, see if they like it, and then build the safety after.
Yep. And that is, and the good news is that's in process. Like I'm hopeful, like it's going to take a while, but there's a lot of discussion. So I am hopeful that this next generation, you know, our kids' kids are going to have better guardrails in place, you know, which puts a lot of pressure on parents right now. Cause you know, I know parents are nervous about this and I don't want to scare everybody because there are amazing, really good things happening online and kids are doing amazing things too. So let me not paint a dark picture, but I'm just kind of painting the reality of kind of where we find ourselves right now in the world.
And I don't think I don't think you're painting a dark picture. You're painting the reality. And the reality is, I feel a little bit scared. And a lot of it is because I don't know the terminology. I don't know the technology. It takes me twice as long to figure out how to do something online as both of my kids. So I have the fear. What you're telling me is that we realize that there are some shortfalls in what's out there right now and that we're working towards getting it. So it does make me feel better. I said I had 2 points that you had mentioned that I wanted to raise. That was the first one, consumerism. And then the second is, I don't even remember now what the word was you used, but it was something in Snapchat.
Oh, streaks. The streaks.
Yes, snap streaks. You said snap streaks. And my reaction was, I don't even know what a snap streak is because my kids aren't on Snapchat yet. We are keeping them off of social media as long as we can, but we know that virtually by middle school, virtually all the kids are on social media, at least in one form or another. And Snapchat is incredibly popular for that age group. And that the fact that I don't know the terminology, I don't know what's being used, does scare me. What can you tell me about what safety protocols you think are maybe on the horizon?
Okay, so from the federal level, and again, this is we're just at the very beginning. So two bills just left the Senate. One is CASA, KOSA, Child Online Safety Act, and the other one is COPPA, Child Online Privacy and Protection Act. And that one is actually a redo of one that was out in the 90s. So these are just they're very beginning, really starting on mostly data privacy for kids. What I'm not seeing quite yet are things like maybe some regulations in place for tech companies for persuasive design. So persuasive design is the way these technologies are built in ways that keep us going back, and they're brilliant. So a snap streak in Snapchat itself is, what a snap streak is two young people or people in general, they have this ongoing, every day they're snapping a picture and sending it to each other. And Snapchat counts that. And so some kids will have a streak of like 97 days or maybe 3 years. And then it becomes really meaningful. Like they don't want to be the one to accidentally break that streak, but sometimes they get in a dilemma where their family's going camping and they have no internet, and now they're stressed because they're going to lose this streak. And I'm not going to belittle this because for a lot of kids, this is very meaningful. This might be a representation of that friendship, that they've had this snap streak so long. So it becomes very meaningful, but it's just one of those features that keeps kids, feeling attached to the phones and a little stressed. There's positives and there are negatives. It's really validating a relationship they have, but it's also a little stressful to maintain this too. So what I do see is for kids, it's a balance. It's a love-hate thing. They love the access, the connection with their friends, but with that, for some kids, not all kids. Now everyone's using things differently. For some kids, it brings on what I call digital stress, and it's to maintain all these things. There's some social norms online to, respond, positively when your friend posts things and, to validate things and, to really kind of keep up with the online social scene. And what's different from our childhood is, when we would go our own ways, we weren't in contact with each other, but these days they're in contact all the time. So it's hard for kids to kind of check out and, just have time to just be and settle and relax.
I think you're raising something that really aligns with my next question, which is, I think a lot of us parents thought or think, depending on whether or not our kids have phones yet or not, but we thought that stranger danger on the phone was the biggest issue we had to worry about, making sure our kids weren't talking to people that they shouldn't be. And that's a huge deal and very important. But you're talking about so much more than that. What do you think, in your research, what are you seeing is the biggest challenge kids with phones face?
That's a great question. I feel like kind of getting back to that digital stress is the need to keep up with everything. And so a lot of kids have their phones all night, and because kids are engaging at all hours of the night. When I was visiting middle schools, one of the common things I heard was how tired kids were, and often because they are either up gaming or they're up chatting, so they're that's tough, to try to function as a preteen or an adolescent on not a lot of sleep. That's going to ripple into every area of their life. And often, the reason they're doing that, one, because these games are so engaging and fun, but also, their peers might still be connecting. And so at this stage of life, they really want to be part of that. So it's hard to pull out, to get out of that, to actually get a good night's rest. So this is a challenge for, parents too, to try to help to make sure their kids are getting the rest they need and unplugging, so they can take care of themselves and take care of their other responsibilities in life. And again, this is not all kids, just some kids, this is more, more of an influence than others, and so I did find that too, that kids are using phones in different ways. So I don't want to say that this is going to happen to every kid, but for some kids, it becomes a really strong pull, an influence in their life where it starts to take over a lot of other things.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we have to think about is how we model our phone behavior for our kids as well. And when you're talking about like the texting at night or the gaming at night, there's different aspects to that. And this social stress of response quickly, when they're watching us using our phones all the time and responding to texts in the middle of dinner, it feels like if they get a message or if somebody sends them something, they have to react immediately. I think when they watch us doing that consistently, and it's hard, but I feel like we have to do a better job of modeling with mm-hmm. our kids as well.
And you know, talking honestly out loud, like, so maybe we find ourselves scrolling and we notice that, and our kids are nearby and we're like, oh my gosh, why am I mindlessly scrolling? This is not what I want to be doing right now. Or, you know, or being very, you know, clear about never touching your phone in the car, you know, so that's, you know, now that I've got teens, I try to not touch my phone. Is not even where I could reach it. I, you know, so just modeling, not touching my phone while I'm in the car. So all those little things that, you know, just help them start to see a different set of norms as far as how they're using their phones.
Once again, if we give our kids the ability to be conscious, at least of what's happening with them and their relationship with their phone, it enables them to make better choices. And the same thing with us. When we're conscious of how we want to be handling our phone, it's not that we're going to do it perfectly every time, but it does help. I know with us, like, we're not perfect. We try to model good behavior, but we are not the best at it by any means. And it's important for our family. We have to let our kids call us out sometimes. Like, I'm the one who could grab a text from somebody and then start to respond and then forget that I'm supposed to be paying attention to something else that's really important. My kids call me out on that. My husband, he's the one who will pick up something in the middle of, like, he'll get a text in the middle of dinner and he'll respond to it. And we have to set boundaries for us, and we have to hear our kids' reaction, because sometimes we have to respond. Sometimes it's necessary, but our kids don't see that part. They just see mom and dad are using their phone. They tell us not to, and they're still doing it. So I feel like for us, it's like admitting that we're not perfect, admitting that we're trying hard and it's difficult, and letting them say, hey, you probably need to work on this too, is helpful for them to be able to hear it when it's coming in the other direction.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, having really honest conversations about it in the moment. So say it is dinner and, you know, your phone dings and you notice it is something you have to take. Venga, I'm so sorry. This is grandma and she's not well today. I just need to check on her. I'll be right back. You know, so just acknowledging it in the moment, you know, so they can see they're not just assuming that you're doing something unimportant. It's something that actually needs to be attended to now. So, you know, always conversations all the time about all this stuff, because, you know, we're all working through it and trying to do our best.
Yeah. When you said that, it kind of just, like, I feel that sometimes us parents should just narrate our life in front of our kids.
Yes.
You know, they don't know what we're deciding to do and why in the moment. They only see it through their lens. And so I feel like this falls in under that category. We need to narrate what we're doing in front of them so that they have the thought process that we're using. And hopefully that helps them design their own.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even like, say, a text that comes in, you know, and you could say, gosh, I don't know if this text means this or this, you know. So just helping them even see how we can easily misconstrue the meaning of a message just because it came through a text. So you all, they're all great opportunities for conversations just to talk about, you know, the challenging ways we all are navigating our online worlds.
Yeah, I think that's great. So you have kids, you have teens of your own.
Yes.
Do they have smartphones? And what are your rules?
Oh, they do. And so now I've got a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old. And like I said at the beginning, you know, we started in a different place when they were 13. So we started, you know, with Gizmo gadgets when they were younger than 13, where they just had the ability to do texting and calling. And then when they got to be 13, there was babysitting involved, you know, so they actually needed a phone, you know, to go to babysit, because there was no other phone on the premises. So that got us started. And to be honest, I didn't have the conversation with my older daughter. I didn't have the conversations I wanted to, because I didn't even know the conversations to have. And that definitely is what inspired the book. And so, you know, so I my second daughter happened to be when I was writing this book. So that opened the door to all the conversations I wanted to have. But our rules have changed over time, you know. So when they were younger and they were just learning things, like you, they weren't on social media initially. You know, we kind of got there. Just their basic comfort with having a phone, and making sure they're managing screen time with the other things they have on their, you know, on their list of things to do, homework and the chores and things like that. And then as they grew, you know, they did get into social media. So my older, I've really pulled back the reins now. Now she's 17, and I feel like, you know, I have to let her start to make a lot of her own decisions because she's going to go off to college next year. So I've scaled those back. And so with her, you know, I'm just hoping that all these conversations that we've had over the course of her childhood, you know, that she now is making her own choices. But I still, because I'm sleep is my really big thing. And my kids would tell you that too. I do regularly talk to her. I'm like, hey, so how are you getting enough sleep? You know, and we can have honest conversations about that, you know, because she knows I'm coming from a place where I want to make sure that she is well and rested and, you know, being able to do all the things she wants to do. So we still talk about it all the time, even though she's 17 years old.
I think that's helpful to know that, you know, the conversation is ongoing, even when you're in the process of really passing over the reins. And it's so much harder to rein it in after you've given it away. And your first point was, we hold the power when we're handing that phone over. And so the better job we can do of setting the ground rules and setting the framework for what our family views as appropriate phone use initially, we can always release it. We can always give them more authority over their own decisions, but we have such a hard time taking it back.
Exactly. You know, and here's something that I've seen, and this hopefully is helpful to your listeners, is, you know, in my other book too, my middle school book, you know, the middle school years are just a little crazy for some kids, not all, but there's a lot of change going on. And I find that, you know, even with their life with the phone, that's the case too. But now that I've got older teens and know a lot of older teens and work with older teens, it settles out. And so I've actually seen that happening with their phone use too. So it's almost like in the beginning, you know, it's a little unsettled, just like life is in middle school, preteen, but then they kind of settle in and some of these things become less important. They might not be so into snap streaks anymore. So what would be helpful if you have a preteen that's just entering this world and you happen to know a 16 or 17 year old, have that 16 or 17 year old impart some of the knowledge to the younger preteen, because they will so remember what it was like to be in middle school and some of the dynamics that go on with phones and you know, social media, and they can give them the wisdom of what it's like to actually be older now. And I've seen huge shifts there. So know that that's coming, parents. There will be a time that it will settle out a little bit, but there might be times where you're wondering if you made the right choice.
Yeah, I think that's important to remind people too. And the idea of giving your preteen access to a teen who's kind of been there, done that is such good advice. My son just referred to me as prehistoric the other day. And the reality is when it comes to tech, I am. Like, I can't believe that this has happened to me, but I am. This was not an issue when I was in middle school. There's no relevance to my middle school experience. So yeah, a lot of the things that kids kind of deal with in middle school are the same, but this component of it is completely foreign to me. And mm-hmm. So having them talk to somebody who they can respect in a few stages ahead of them, but that actually understands using a phone in their young years, I think that's really helpful.
Yeah. And you're right. Cause I, you know, I've just researched and wrote a book on this, and I still don't understand some of the under the surface nuances of all of this, but there is a book out there that I was just seeing if I could find the authors of it. It's called Behind Their Screens. Oh, I just found it. Behind Their Screens by Emily Weinstein and Carrie James. And these two women researched, you know, for years, thousands of preteens and teens about what is actually happening. You know, what are some of these social dynamics and new social norms? And I highly recommend it because it gives us a better understanding. We are not going to get it, you know, to the level that our preteens and teens have it, but this will start to give us a little peek into their world. And, you know, the best that we can do is come at all this from a place of curiosity with our kids. So stay curious, you know, so instead of like just judging things or assuming they're bad, really coming at it like, oh, so what do you love about that app? Oh, how does that work? You know, so really trying to understand this whole new world because it's actually really interesting, you know, so, and especially yeah. for me as a, you know, a person who loves social science and loves this age group, for me, I love learning how this works because it is fascinating. It is a whole new way that, you know, people are connecting now. There's a lot to learn. And if we stay curious and try to stay out of that judgment, you know, we'll have a much better chance of tapping into what they are experiencing.
Yep. I think that's great advice. And that book you said was Behind Their Screens?
Mm-hmm. Behind Their Screens.
And we will have a link to that in the show notes as well for everyone. I have not read that yet, but it is now on my list. So thank you for that. Now, I'd like to know, where can we get the phone book for all of our kids who are just starting middle school, or maybe even for kids who have had a phone for a little bit? I think this book is useful.
Yeah, it's available anywhere books are sold now. So Target or Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and you know, you can check with your local bookseller because I always do love to support our local bookstores. And they, if they don't have it, they could get it in. And, you know, it does talk about all those things, like you mentioned, stranger danger and disinformation and FOMO and privacy and safety. And, you know, all those things that we definitely want to equip our kids as they're getting started here.
Thank you so much, Jessica. This has been really informative.
Well, thanks for having me, Jen. It's great to chat with you again.
Thank you for listening to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more conversations with experts designed to help you support your middle school girl, please hit subscribe. You can also sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes to receive emails about tips and resources, upcoming events, and new podcast episodes, all designed to support you and your child.